This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Dr. Scott Stanley back on the program with us this week. Dr. Stanley is a research professor and co-director of the Center for Marital and Family Studies at the University of Denver. He is also senior fellow for the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia and for the Institute for Family Studies. We're going to be continuing a discussion that we began last week with Dr. Stanley about a new report from the National Marriage Project, which he co-authored, entitled Before I Do, What Do Premarital Experiences Have to Do with Marital Quality Among Today's Young Adults? Last week, we talked about a few of the key findings from the report, including the growing percentage of young couples today who are cohabiting and having children before marriage rather than getting married first. We also talked about how premarital relationships and sexual activity can impact marital quality. This week, we are going to be picking back up with that discussion. Dr. Stanley, welcome back to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us again.
Thank you very much.
Well, Dr. Stanley, what are some of the key findings in the report regarding previous sexual relationships and the impact of those relationships on the quality of someone's marriage?
Yeah, let me talk about a few of those findings. And also, I should say that a lot of these findings are actually consistent with other findings in the literature and other kinds of methods. So even though some people kind of bristle about some of these findings, these are not new ideas, although we have sort of some really good methods for looking at them. So one finding is that people tend to report higher quality marriage. They tend to be more satisfied, feel comfortable communicating, trust, etc., if they only ever had sex with the person that they married, as opposed to with a number of partners. And then beyond that, the more sexual partners somebody has had historically in their life, and we found that the typical person reported having 5 before marriage in addition to the person that they married if they had sex with that person, that the more sexual partners people had, that the more likely they would report lower marital quality. Similarly, and there's a lot of literature on this now, if somebody had ever cohabited with somebody, whether or not they cohabited with their mate, the person they married, if they had ever cohabited with somebody else, they were also more likely to report somewhat lower marital quality. And then, of course, if they had had a child by a prior partner, that, of course, is a risk factor for how their marriage is going to do once they settle down with somebody.
Now, the report also looked at something called sliding versus deciding, which I believe is a term that you all coined in this report. Explain what you mean by sliding versus deciding, and in what ways does this impact marital quality?
I coined that phrase looking at Galena Rhodes and I were really getting more deeply into research on cohabitation, and testing a theory that we had that goes back a ways now, that part of what people don't see that's risky about cohabiting before marriage is that they're going to make it harder to break up. And so that led to many studies now that really confirm a lot of what we believed, which is that what a lot of people end up doing is they actually make it harder to break up before they've made a clear choice, because living together makes it harder to break up than just dating, all of the things being equal. One of the things that we think compounds that is that some other researchers had all sort of found or concluded over the years that a lot of people slide into cohabiting in the first place. So even, given the other risks that I just mentioned about, that it's going to make it harder to break up and people not seeing that, people are actually fairly sort of not even noticing that they're, moving in together. There's more and more stuff over one place. Person gets a drawer, maybe a part of a closet, then maybe one day somebody's lease is up or the roommates kick them out, and all of a sudden the couple's living together without making a real decision about it. That led to this idea, and commitment's always a decision. So So if you think about the contrast between sliding into cohabiting versus making a decision about really committing to somebody for the future, like in marriage, there's a big contrast there. And now what we do is we apply that thinking to all these kinds of relationship transitions that people go through now without, many people, without thinking much about them in terms of sex, living together, even having a child together. You know, many, many children now are unplanned. And we think that phrase now is a catch-all for a lot of what's been transformed now in the sort of dating, mating life of Americans, that people are often sliding through transitions that are consequential and that they should be making decisions about and thinking clearly about versus just letting happen.
Well, I tell you one thing I enjoyed about the report, an interesting finding from the study that is called the Big Fat Greek Wedding Factor. Explain for us what this is all about, and I think it relates to how the choices that couples make about their actual wedding will tend to impact marital quality later on, or at least give a snapshot as to what that may look like.
Very, very good. Yeah. So this is the newest kind of finding, although in the finding, there's two of them. One is that people that had a wedding, a formal wedding versus not, and I don't mean like formal, but you know, they actually say they had a wedding versus just got married some other way, like justice of the peace, tend to be reporting higher marital quality. And the people that had more guests at their wedding tend to report or have an edge in reporting higher marital quality. Now, some of that, again, is going to be selection. And some of it will also be other things that we didn't measure so that we can't really account for, like parental wealth. We do control for the income of the individuals, their education, race, you know, and religiosity. We control for a lot of dimensions like that. But there's other things that we realize that we didn't measure. And so there's alternative explanations, and then I'll get to the ones we think are really interesting to think about in terms of positive consequential ones. You know, it could be that people maybe aren't feeling as sure about their relationship. Maybe they have a child before marriage and they feel less good about sort of putting their, you know, marriage on display. So all that stuff's going to be in the mix. But we also looked at some of those things, and we don't think that can explain everything. The most interesting idea is that there's a strong set of findings and theory in our field of psychology that shows that when people make clear decisions and publicly declare their intentions, they're more likely to follow through on what they've committed to. And in fact, one theorist really predicted long ago, based on these kind of literatures, that people should do better in marriage even if they have more guests, because there's more witnesses. They're actually declaring their commitment and their vows in front of more people, which will produce a stronger sense that they need to follow through. Now, that also is going to reflect the fact that some couples just have more resources, they have better social network to begin with, so they have more people they could invite to the wedding. And we really don't, you know, want to play up the idea of people spending a lot of money. On the other hand, there's a tradition throughout the history of humanity that if you're starting on an important journey or an important commitment, that you very often mark that by a ceremony with witnesses where you're really making a public statement about what you're about to do and the degree to which you plan to follow through. And weddings very much conform to that pattern. So we think at times people could strengthen their follow-through in their marriage by really making that public declaration stronger and clearer and in front of witnesses so that it strengthens their intention to follow through later.
Well, as we conclude our discussion, the report discusses near the end an interesting question that I'm sure after our discussion today is on the minds of a number of our listeners, and that is, can I change my odds? In other words, if an individual has engaged in some of these activities or risky behaviors prior to marriage that we've discussed, can they really improve their opportunities for a fulfilling and successful marriage relationship?
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the ways I like to say this to people now is, you know, nothing here means you're doomed. And in terms of specific advice, you know, a lot of people can recover very well in terms of, you know, if they've increased their risks in different ways. And one of the ways people can start to improve their odds, if they feel like their life so far has been lowering their odds, is to adopt a deciding mindset moving forward. So to really think clearly about this idea, or embrace this notion that I'm not going to let things just happen to me any longer in my relationship. And it could be that they're married now and they're 10 years into marriage. Same idea. Maybe a person feels like they've been sliding all the way up to that point. A person can start to decide now to be intentional, to make better choices in their relationship, how they act on their commitment. If it's before marriage or before even finding a partner they're thinking about marrying, that could be being more careful about who they're with, how they're with, what are their values, deciding more instead of letting things slide. Another way people can improve their odds is if they are seriously involved, they're married, or they're thinking about really committing to somebody in marriage. If there's some experiences that have affected them that they feel like they've might affect them in marriage, find a way to talk about that together. And I don't mean by that, you know, sort of like sharing every detail of history and all the gory details and things like that. But for example, if one feels like they really were hurt in the past by some way in which another had displayed a lack of faithfulness and broken trust or anything like that they feel like has affected them, that could be really valuable to talk with, if there's emotional safety, with that prospective mate and really figure out how could we manage this together and really take good care of each other together in a commitment in marriage. And then lastly, we're big believers that people can always get help. That could be counseling, that could be getting just wisdom from somebody around that they figure that person seems to know what they're doing. And that could also be, you know, relationship education, taking a workshop, reading a book together. You mentioned my book, A Lasting Promise. It's got a lot of great ideas in it. People can do any number of things like that to try to strengthen their relationship where they're at and build it and overcome risk factors that they may have from their past.
Well, that's a great encouragement. And I'm sure that applies to not only young couples, but even older couples that have been married for a number of years. There certainly is hope. And I just appreciate very much those words of encouragement. And we would encourage our listeners to look into those. And one of those things, I think a great place to start is availing themselves of this new report, the Before I Do report. Dr. Stanley, where can our listeners go to learn more about the report and get a copy of it?
If they go to the National Marriage Project .org, so just all one word, nationalmarriageproject.org, or just Google National Marriage Project, they'll get to the main page for the National Marriage Project, and then this is the current first thing that they would see that they could click on, is this new report. But a person could also go there and look at any number of reports over the last couple of decades. I think they're all there, and there's a lot of interesting reports over the years on different dimensions of relationships. But this one would be front and center when they land there, and they could find it and read it. And we did write it for the average person to just be able to read it and get what they could from it. So hopefully it will benefit some people.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And let me repeat that website. It's www.nationalmarriageproject.org. Again, nationalmarriageproject.org. Well, Dr. Scott Stanley, it has been a real pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us on Family Policy Matters and for sharing your insights about relationships and marriage. We are really appreciative.
Thank you. I really appreciate being on your show, John. Thank you.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org. I would also like to recommend an excellent resource to help our listeners stay on top of some of the major public policy and cultural issues facing families in North Carolina today, the North Carolina Family Policy Council's quarterly magazine, Family North Carolina. The magazine is filled with engaging articles on some of the key public policy and cultural issues facing families in our state today. The latest issue of Family North Carolina magazine is available on our website in a digital version. Visit our website at ncfamily.org. That's ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.